And so there's been some practical things to figure out. But there was also some getting used to some of the deeper complexities of the role. And one of the biggest challenges, I think, is going to be the change from working in a church-based environment where most of the people I'm meeting with on a daily basis tend to be Christians, where most of my meetings involve conversations about God. And in most of those meetings, we tend to end or start with the magic prayer, as Gwyn calls it. We tend to pray together in those meetings. To move into work in a very different environment, in a multi-faith chaplaincy with people of different faiths there, and in a university that would describe themselves as a secular organization. Obviously, within that organization, I'm going to be employed as a Christian chaplain, and so my role involves providing support and input from a Christian perspective and from my experience in Christian ministry. But equally, there are some real sensitivities around how chaplains conduct themselves and how we seek to impart our faith to others in this multi-faith secular organization. So there's this balance to strike between respecting the organization of the university and the privileged position of being invited into that, whilst also using that opportunity to share the love of Jesus with others, certainly through my actions and where possible with my words as well. As I've reflected a little bit over the last week or so on this change of environment and navigating this new context, it's made me actually appreciate a lot more the context that most of you find yourselves in on a daily basis. Because many of you will be familiar with the challenges and the sensitivities of living out your Christian faith in a secular environment, whether that's working as a university lecturer or a teacher in a school or a nurse or a doctor in the NHS or a radio presenter or a civil servant or an accountant or in whatever form of work that you do or a voluntary organisation. I think we're all familiar in some ways with the challenge of being a Christian in a society which is increasingly multi-faith and secular at the same time. I'm sure we've all been cautious at times about the words that we use, how we share our faith, and whether it's appropriate to offer to pray for someone. And I'm sure we've all at times feared getting that wrong as well, or being made fun of, or getting into trouble for overstepping the mark. But as Christians, we believe in sharing our faith with others. We're told to be salt and light, to be distinct and different. Jesus gave us the Great Commission to go into the world and make disciples. And we're told to always be ready to give an answer for the hope that we have in Jesus. This call to share our faith is part of who we are. But at the same time, there's so many different ways in which we can do that. And often it's about considering the most appropriate way to share our faith in the context that we find ourselves in. In some context, that might be talking to someone about Jesus quite directly. In others, it might simply be to listen, to provide pastoral support, to show love through our actions. As I've reflected on all this, it's the story of Daniel that we've looked at today in the Old Testament that came to my mind. Because Daniel was one of a group of young intellectual Jewish nobles who, during the exile of the Jewish people to Babylon, was transported away from their homes in Jerusalem and into captivity in a foreign land. And this exile lasted over 70 years. And during this 70-year period, Daniel served three different Babylonian kings. Whilst at this time many people from Israel were taken as prisoners to Babylon, these young nobles were identified as people who could benefit the Babylonian society, who could benefit the king. And they were taken into the king's court. And the king thought he could indoctrinate them and train them, and that eventually they would work for him as his advisors and his officials. And so Daniel found himself as a young Jewish man serving in the court of a foreign king who didn't share his belief system. But over time, Daniel was recognized for his wisdom and his intellect. He rose through the ranks and became particularly close to King Darius. He was so well respected and had integrated so well into this Babylonian society that King Darius planned to put Daniel in charge of the entire kingdom. But what we see as we go through the book of Daniel is that despite integrating well into the culture, Daniel continued to hold firm to his Jewish faith. And when push came to shove, Daniel always put his devotion to God above his loyalty to the king of Babylon. And this commitment to God lands Daniel and some of his friends in some quite risky situations. I'm sure many of you know the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who refused to obey the king's orders to worship pagan gods and end up being thrown into the fiery furnace. And then there's the story that we've read today of Daniel, who finds himself in the lion's den. But despite knowing the risks, Daniel and his friends, whilst conforming in many ways to the culture around them, were uncompromising in their faith in God. They would not worship any other god. They would not pray to any other person other than their God. And so I'd like to spend a bit more time looking at Daniel chapter 6, which contains this story of Daniel and the lion's den. Don't want that slide yet. And at the start of this chapter, King Darius, Tony read it to us earlier, appoints 120 satraps. And you might be wondering, what is a satrap? A satrap was basically a governor of part of the empire, the Babylonian Empire. And so he appointed 120 governors to oversee his empire. And then he appointed 3 administrators who were to oversee these governors. And Daniel was one of these administrators. But the other governors, the other satraps, and the other administrators felt threatened by Daniel, partly due to his intellect, partly because of his close relationship with the king and the fear he might become more powerful. But they also didn't like him because he was a Jew and because he worshipped a different god to them. And so they got together and they came up with this plot to get rid of Daniel. We read in verse 5 of the passage that they realized that they would struggle to find any charge against Daniel, presumably because he lived a very righteous life. But they knew that his faith was a vulnerability that they could exploit to turn King Darius against him. And so they tried to catch Daniel out by convincing the king to issue this new law that would pose a challenge to Daniel's faith. And the king's decree says that for 30 days no one could pray to any other god or king other than King Darius. And of course, Daniel continues to pray to his god, and he ends up being put in the lion's den. I don't know about you, I've never been put in a lion's den or felt that much risk for being a Christian. But at times, I have faced situations where, I don't know, people have tried to catch me out because of my faith or have made fun of me in some way because of my faith. I remember at university living with someone who took great pride in pointing out my faults, saying things like, "And I thought you were a good Christian." And actually, this was all done in jest. But there's this sense of wanting to prove that Christians aren't good enough or as righteous as they seem or they should be. Although we know as Christians that we're just as broken and in need of God's grace as anyone else. Last week I was staying with my cousin when I was in Bristol. And we went out for some food with some of his friends. And there was one person who, having never met me before, was very keen to kind of make an example of my faith, saying some quite strange comments. And they were also very quick to tell me that they were an atheist. And actually, in having some experiences like these, what I've come to realize is that often these kinds of comments come from a place of insecurity and fear. People fear things that they don't know or don't understand, or perhaps they've had a bad experience of in the past. We also aren't helped, I don't think, as Christians, by the media, who portray us in ways that aren't helpful, as insensitive or judgmental, and lead people to react to Christians in a certain way. In the case of Daniel, I think these other officials feared what they didn't know. They think Daniel is going to get into power and will make everyone worship his God. And so they want to get rid of him. They're insecure, and they find a way to get him thrown into the lion's den. Often when we read some of these Old Testament prophets, some of the words and the stories that we read are pointers to Jesus and what he was going to come and do. I know many of you will know of some of those prophecies. I wonder whether in this story, the relationship between Daniel and King Darius and these satraps, these governors, reflects what would eventually happen between Jesus and Pontius Pilate at his trial and the Pharisees who wanted Jesus dead. The Pharisees plotted against Jesus, just like these governors were plotting against Daniel. They struggled to find fault in Jesus, but eventually arrested him. And they took him before Pontius Pilate, who, a bit like King Darius, who actually quite liked Daniel and was fond of him. I think Pontius Pilate had a slight fondness for Jesus. He didn't want to crucify him. He said he washed his hands with the crucifixion. Jesus was arrested and put to death because the religious leaders, the Pharisees, were insecure and fearful of what they didn't know and were scared that the status quo would be disrupted and they would lose their own power. As we read about Daniel, we are struck by some of his strengths, the strengths of his character. And I'd like to pick out a couple of his strengths that led him to stand firm in the face of these people who were threatening him and who sought to plot against him. And we could probably apply these two strengths to Jesus as well, having just mentioned him. The first of his strengths is the distinctiveness of Daniel. Daniel was different from other people in the king's court. And this was both a positive that led him to find favor with King Darius, but it also led to others fearing him and wanting to get rid of him. In the first chapter of Daniel, we read about Daniel as a young man being taken from Israel and arriving in Babylon in the king's court. And one of the first things that they do is they give Daniel and some of his friends heaps of rich food to eat and wine to drink. But Daniel, in his wisdom, saw that this food and drink wouldn't benefit him. It would only make him fat and drunk. And so he asked instead for vegetables and water. I think I would have gone for the first option. The king's servants thought he was being rude in refusing the king's food, and they thought that he would be weak from just eating vegetables and drinking water. But Daniel tells him to try it out for 10 days, to give him vegetables and water, and then to compare him with the other servants of the king who were eating the king's food and drinking the king's wine. After 10 days, it was very clear that Daniel was much healthier than the others. And from that point on, all the king's servants were fed on the same diet as Daniel. So even at this early stage in the story, Daniel is different. Daniel is distinct in the way that he acts and the choices that he makes, in his wisdom. And that's recognized by the king, who eventually gives him more power because of it. It likely annoyed the other servants, who, like me, would probably have preferred to drink the wine and eat the fatty foods. As we read on, the theme of Daniel being different and being set apart from everyone else and being distinct continues. When other people worship idols, Daniel and his friends refuse to. When the king has dreams and visions that can't be understood and interpreted by other people, Daniel is able to step in and he offers an interpretation. And when the people are ordered to pray to no one other than the king, Daniel continues to pray to his God. There's this clear difference in Daniel's character that, yes, appears as a threat to other people in the king's court, but this same distinctiveness also appealed to King Darius, who liked him and wanted to give him more power and status. So Daniel had this very different, distinct wisdom integrity and humility that others lacked. And it was rooted in his faith in God. And that leads to the second aspect of Daniel's character, and that's the security of Daniel. When we read about Daniel, we get this sense of calmness. He never seemed to be shaken or moved by anything, despite facing some quite difficult circumstances. In verse 10 of chapter 6, Daniel finds out about the plot against him and the decree that bans people from praying to anyone other than the king for 30 days. And we read that Daniel went to his room, he shut the door, he went to the window that faced Jerusalem, and he prayed 3 times a day. And the verse ends by saying that he did this just as he always had done. This wasn't some panicked response to the decree from King Darius. I don't know about you, when I face a difficult circumstance, I probably pray more than I normally would. But Daniel simply carries on like normal. He'd always prayed that way. He always prayed the same time, the same place, at his window facing Jerusalem, in the same way every day. And so that's what he did. He knew that there would be consequences to praying following this decree. But he carried on praying just as he always had done. He wasn't shaken, he wasn't moved, because his security wasn't found in pleasing King Darius and worshipping this king. His security was found in his relationship with God. And again here we see something of Daniel being different and being distinct. The people who sought to plot against Daniel were insecure and feared losing their power. I think King Darius himself also shared that insecurity in his apparent need for everyone to worship him and pray to him all the time. But Daniel is different. He's the only person in this story who isn't seeking power for himself, who isn't seeking status or wealth. He's the only person in this story who appears to be self-assured and secure. And that's because Daniel knew who he was. The others were still trying to establish their identity, whilst Daniel already had an identity as a chosen child of God. And he didn't need anything else. He didn't need to keep the king happy or bring other people down to feel safe and secure. He was secure in knowing that whatever happened, he belonged to God and God would be in control. And that's the overarching theme of the whole book of Daniel. It's the supremacy or the sovereignty of God. This story of Daniel is a very clear illustration that no earthly power or authority is greater or more powerful than God. Despite all of the evil actions of others, Daniel is delivered from the lion's den. His friends are rescued from the fiery furnace. And then a little later in chapter 7, we read a prophecy about the future arrival of the Ancient of Days who will save his people from all evil and death. And again, this is a pointer to Jesus, showing that God's ultimate plan is to redeem and save this broken world. And this reminds me of a passage from Colossians chapter 1. It's quite a well-known couple of verses which talks about the supremacy of God. It says, "The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together." In the story of Daniel, we learn how he was able to remain so calm and secure despite the plots against him. It was because of his faith and trust that in all situations, God is in control. At times, I think we would like to have that same trust as Daniel. I don't know about you, I'd like to have that same trust as Daniel. But we get scared and we get worried that God might not come through for us. You'll know a number of weeks ago I was preaching and I was saying, "Oh, we're going through this difficult time we haven't got a house and Esther hasn't got a job. Is God going to come through for us? And we kept on praying to God, what's happening? Why aren't you coming through? And then on the same day, the week before last, on a Tuesday, Esther got a job and we got our house on the same day. And we went, okay, God, yes, you do come through. But sometimes we do have those worries and we do have that lack of trust. In chapter 3, when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are about to be thrown into the fiery furnace, there's this line where they say to the king, if we are thrown into the fiery furnace, we believe that the God we serve is able to deliver us. But even if he does not, we will still not worship false gods. And I think this verse speaks something into the doubts and questions we might have in trusting fully in the sovereignty of God. These three men aren't 100% sure that God will deliver them from the fiery furnace. They know that God is able, they've said that. But they say that they're going to trust in God even if they aren't delivered, because they know that God has the best outcome in mind for them. And they stand firm in their faith and refuse to worship other gods. And again, this reminds me of Jesus in the lead up to his crucifixion. You'll know the passage about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he pleads with God, if it's possible to take this cup from me, then do it. But ultimately, your will be done. Jesus asks God to remove his suffering, but recognizes the sovereignty of God, who knows what is best and what must happen. We look at our world today and we don't always understand what's going on with our human minds. We look at the world and see Russians and Ukrainians being killed because of the power conquest of one man. And we wonder why so many people are suffering. Yet we stand firm in believing that God is in control, praying, your will be done. We look at the civil war in Sudan and don't understand why such senseless fighting needs to happen. Yet we stand firm in believing that God is in control, and we pray, your will be done. And we recognize that sin and evil are present in the world, and that leads to injustice and suffering. Yet we stand firm knowing that God is stronger and greater and higher than any other power or authority, and he has a plan to work all this out for good in the end. This was the kind of trust that led Daniel to be so calm and secure as he entered the lion's den. He didn't know if the lions were going to eat him or not, but he trusted that God had a plan, and God's plan was greater than he could even imagine. God's plan, in his case, was to save him from the mouths of the lions. And to use this miracle to change the heart of King Darius and to lead many other people to faith. At the end of chapter 6, we read a new decree sent out by King Darius. It says, I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So I'd like to finish off where we started. I began by talking about this balance of living as a Christian in a society which is increasingly multi-faith and secular. Daniel provides this great example of someone who integrated into a completely different foreign culture without ramming his faith down the throats of those around him. But yet he influenced that culture through his wisdom and his humility and his integrity, which were rooted in his faith and made him stand out from the crowd. Daniel was salt and light. He was distinct and different because of the security that he drew from his relationship with his sovereign God, which provided a constant and stabilizing influence on Daniel's life, even in the most challenging of times and places. The story of Daniel encourages us to root our lives firmly in God, to make our devotion to God through prayer and worship, a constant and unchanging fixture in our daily lives, so that even in the most difficult of circumstances and on the hardest of days, we can look to God and say, God, I really don't know how this is going to work out, but I know that you're in control. So your will be done. And my prayer is that, like in the story of Daniel, as we live with this kind of solid trust in God, that others would see our distinctiveness and our security as children of God, and will begin to ask questions, and will want the same for their lives as well.